WNST, Tassel Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive reminding you to set AM 1570 on your dial. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour this week. We're getting the South and West, the Spirits West in the city. We're going to have a good time over there. Hear about the legendary crab cake around the corner from our friends at St. Agnes and Mount St. Joe, trying to get the Gales people all going. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Window Nation. I mean, a weird week this week. If I sound high as a kite on the air, it's a mainlining Benadryl right now for an eye sting. And I look a little freaky deaky on our YouTube, but that's okay. I'm ugly most of the time anyway. That's why I keep Luke around, to be young and good looking here on the interwebs. Hey, man, welcome back to you, or welcome back to me. A bunch of football, a bunch of baseball. I want to start with baseball with you because obviously the Chicago thing wasn't going well there for a while. I had a lot of friends who went out to Chicago and North Side, paying too much for beer, taking the train and like all that. Worked out better on Sunday, but certainly kind of a weird trip for the Orioles out to Chicago.
It is, and it's just weird going to Wrigley in general, right? I mean, and if you've been there, it's a great experience. Don't get me wrong. I went many years ago with my best friend and, you know, Wrigleyville and that whole experience. It's cool. I mean, it really is, but
you should
strange.
Go back and see what all that corporate money did to your, did. You know, you should
I know,
go back
right?
and see what it looks like now. Because you saw it when it was like real. You go back now, it's like a parking garage. Yeah,
I think it was 2008. Felix PA, I remember, delivered a big hit at some point in one of the games that I saw. But it's just weird, right? Because you play a Friday afternoon game. You don't do that anywhere else other than if you're playing your home opener at the beginning of the season. And then you play two more day games after that. That's not as strange. But, you know, just kind of a weird series for the Orioles. I mean, Monday or on Friday, it was a case of middle relief really catching up with them. They didn't swing the bats particularly well. Saturday, they didn't swing the bats well. Sunday, you get that weird peacock game where it starts a little bit earlier than you'd anticipate being in Chicago, and Gunnar Henderson scratched not long before first pitch, and you're thinking, oh, great. I mean, they're going to get swept, and you know, you're uneasy about it. And lo and behold, they scrapped together a win, and you know, it was choppy. You know, some bad defense. You know, Ryan O'Hearn misplays a ball in right field. They had some guys thrown out on the bases, so it wasn't a well played, crisp 9 innings for the Orioles on Sunday. But the bats came alive when they needed to, and the bullpen was really, really good. So you feel way better about losing 2 out of 3 rather than being swept. I mean, they still have not been swept all year. We've talked about their uncanny ability to minimize these lulls, right? They'll lose 2 in a row, but they don't lose 3 or 4 or 5 in a row.
Well, we talked about the magic number last week. It was 17 when we got together last Monday. We get together beginning of this week, 17. Still, I mean, that if they're playing 500 ball and treading water during dog days and weird road trips into Chicago and they can play it at a 500 pace for a week or two or three, that's better than even coming back saying, oh, it's down to 11. You know, because that would indicate some really bad weeks. And you talk about how do they get to 94, 95 wins, where that would be. Well, you know, the separation's very easy. There's 17 games over 500 right now. You don't want to see him get less than 15. And certainly you get panicked to get down in the single digits above 500. If as long as they are where they are and they're not losing series or losing long stretches, 7 out of 10, something like that, they're going to be all right.
Exactly. And really, I mean, we've talked about this throughout, from the time that they had a good April against a not so great schedule to May, where they had a winning month against, you know, what really looked like a gauntlet of opponents as they went through it, and they handled it so well. They've given themselves some wiggle room, but you want to maintain that, right? I mean, you look at them right now, they can play roughly 500 ball the rest of the way and be a 90-win team. I mean, that's kind of where they are right now. I mean, and that's not to say that's what they should be shooting for. They should be aiming higher than that, but it speaks to the kind of position they're in. So, yeah, you're in a position.
They played this trajectory for a year, right? I mean, they've played this kind of baseball for a year. So to say, like, if they took a month off and went 7-19, you know what I mean? Something really awful. It would be so out of character for this group at any point. And if that happens, then they stink and they blew it, and we'll make fun of them and talk about them like they're the 64 Phillies or, you know, whatever. But I can't anticipate that without injury or without large slumps from young players. But I also feel like there's going to be a cavalry here at some point. For the first time, my vibe feels like Elias is going to add, not subtract, to this team. This team will be in August as constructed for the roster, they'll be a better baseball team. I believe that.
You would certainly hope so. I mean, if nothing else, I mean, just look at the internal options. I mean, Cedric Mullins will be back at some point. You know, he's rehabbing with the groin injury. Ryan Mountcastle's dealing with, you know, the vertigo, which he'd really been struggling before. You wonder if that was a factor. You hope he gets himself right, and you hope that he's back to contributing at a level where we've seen him contribute in the past. But, you know, even just looking at a Jordan Westberg, a Colton Cowser, I mean, two guys at AAA who, I mean, they can't do much more than they've done, especially in the case of Westberg. He's been there a year. You know, going back to last June, go look at his numbers over the last
calendar
year. We
don't talk about him
year.
At all, yeah. Right? Because it's always about Holiday. It's always about Heston Kerst. That, I mean, there's all these other riper fruit on the tree or a bigger ceiling, I would say, for a lot of these guys. But, you know, there are names down there that we haven't caught up with. I'm seeing guys play. I watch the what's going on at Bowie, what's going on at Aberdeen, because I'm watching Holiday, watch these guys move up, and the system's stocked. I mean, everything that Elias said he was going to do 4 years ago from a system standpoint, now it's about Mountcastle getting out on the field. It's about Henderson getting out on the field and Rutschman maybe being a little better than he's been, although we gave him plenty of praise. We have an all-star game coming up in a couple of weeks and a second-place team. We got a first-place team coming. We're going down to play them this week. So the baseball thing's really percolating now when we're talking about Norfolk help, right? We haven't talked about Norfolk help here since Rochester, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly. And in a perfect world, you'd have a little more pitching help at Norfolk, and we've talked about that. I mean, the system, their strength is the position player talent. I mean, there's no question about that, and that's not to say there aren't pitchers that won't contribute at some point, and you know, they certainly have shown an ability from a bullpen perspective to find some guys off the beaten path and fix them, so to speak. But yeah, I mean, I look at that, and you look at where they've been the last few weeks, you know, leaning on the Ryan O'Hearns, you know, Josh Lester, I mean, Aaron Hicks has been a great story, really, when you consider the Yankees literally threw him. You know, they literally threw away his big salary and said, hey, you know, we'll pay you, go away. I mean, that's where
what the Orioles were unwilling to do with Chris Davis.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I mean, it's worked for them. However, you do ask the question, and again, you see Ryan O'Hearn misplay a ball in right field, and then you give up a two-run homer right after that. It's an example of, okay, it's great to have these quad A, or in the case of Hicks, a guy that's been cast off by another team that paid him to go away. It's been great to get those contributions. How long are you going to continue to get that? And at what point do you want to dip into AAA and bring up the kind of the next wave? And look, that's not to say Jordan Westbrook is going to come in and be better than their middle infield options that they've had to this point, or in the case of Cowser, that he's going to come in and automatically be one of their three best outfielders. But I think we are getting to that point where you look at that and you're just having that conversation. You're talking about it, right? And I think the key for them now, and we talked about this late last year with Kyle Stowers. We talked about it to a lesser extent with Gunnar Henderson, because I think it was, you know, Gunnar was the number one prospect in baseball at that point. So, but the question you're asking that is way different now than it was even a year ago, let alone talking 2 or 3 years ago when they were so bad, is when you're making that promotion, is that guy better than the guy that I have starting there every night in the major leagues right now? And I think that's where Kyle Stowers ran into the problem, right? And you know, he struggled in very limited playing time, but he struggled so immensely that it you lack confidence putting him in the lineup. And look, there's always that middle ground of, if you play me more, I'll play better. And the manager says, well, if you play better, I'll play you more, right?
I mean, well, then there was also the thing for 5 or 6 years here, didn't really matter,
right?
Because you weren't winning, right?
Right, that's my point. Sure.
Now it's just a completely different thing here.
Right, exactly. So you're trying to figure that out, and you look at that and say, okay, well, you know, we love Colton Cowser, or in the, you know, we'll be talking about that with Heston Kerstad, who's at AAA now and hitting home runs, and would not be shocked to see him in Baltimore before the season's out in some capacity. But that's the big question now. Before, it was a case of, all right, we're replacing a placeholder with at least a maybe kind of a prospect, if not better than that. Now it's a case of, well, we've got a bona fide second place team here that would be first place in just about any other division. I mean, look at how the AL East is separated right now. The Orioles heading into this series with Tampa, 5 out, but everyone else is 10 plus out. So
everybody's going to go back to Manfred and make a case to put the schedule back to unbalance, so these teams can beat each other up instead of everybody else, right?
Yeah, something like that. But but the point is with that, I mean, they've been such a good club with what they've done. How much do you want to change that up? Obviously, you're trying to get better. Obviously, you want to be better. And we'll talk about that with the trade deadline, certainly, as we get closer and closer to that and try to figure out who are the buyers and sellers around baseball. But in the case of the Orioles, I can also understand, I don't think, not trepidation, but I think there is some reluctance to not rock the boat too much and change things up too much because you are playing so well overall. So there is that balance there that they're trying to strike with the guys that they have, and especially talking about guys that might not have minor league options or guys that you're not going to have room for and you might have to move on from someone. You want to be really careful that if you're going to do something like that, then that Jordan Westberg or Colton Cowser or Heston Kerstad later in the year, whoever it is, you want them to be upgrades, right? You don't want to be in a position where they struggle, as rookies often do, and then you're kind of stuck. So
well, they're all watching Aaron Hicks play right now with $100 million in the bank, right? And for better or worse, right? He's playing. They're on a bus in Norfolk. Their clock hasn't started. They haven't gotten their first week of major league pay, which changes your life, as I've heard Ryan Ripken speak about recently, you know, for any of these guys. And, you know, Mullins is coming back anyway and going to sit in that seat. And, you know, you talked about guys just like Stout. I mean, I'm not sure Mullins belonged in the big leagues 2-3 years ago. Certainly they had him up. They sent him way down. He made his way back up. But he was one of those guys that in this place and time, he wouldn't make the team. He wouldn't be here. He wouldn't be given a chance. So there's where the Stoutons and these other guys are like, hey, at some point I got to get a chance again, even if you screw it up. But this is – the pennant race is not the time for that. And we've never had young players coming up. And I say never, dude, been doing this 31 years professionally here in front of everybody. I don't know that I've ever sat here on June 19th and talked about a log jam at AAA and a washed up retread playing every day because the injured 30-30 all-star outfielder is making his way back into a second place team. Like that's 17 games over 500 and we're crying and boo-hooing that they lost a series to the Cubs over the weekend. So, like, the nasty nester of 1993 would love to have these problems, throughout all of my career, right? But it is a different kind of year in that this isn't a test tube baby anymore, right? Like this, and we talked so much in the offseason about whether this was going to be a stumble in or whatever. The April has made it real. All of these decisions, all of these bottom of the roster moves, whether it's pitching or position players, everything's under a microscope at this point because the at-bats are going to start to matter at some point. And it matters even more if they can make hay this week against Tampa.
Absolutely. And a weird two-game set, very brief. You got this off day, two-game series off day, then back home for a nice long homestand. But
sounds like a day on the beach in Florida to me.
Exactly. And I'm sure they'll be or playing some golf. I'm sure there'll be some of that going on as well. But yeah, that's where I think it's so tough. I mean, you know, not to belabor the point, but you look at the infield right now. I mean, Adam Frazier has hit for more power than you thought. I mean, you look at the overall numbers. They're not fantastic, but, you know, by and large, he's been about what you would anticipate. We've talked a lot about Mateo. I mean, he had a big hit on Sunday, but I mean, he's hitting .231. His on-base percentage is .271, you know, going into
he's not their future there, even though I fell in love with him in April, right?
He's not, but that's what's tough because you're
enamored. Is he going to be on the team in October? Is he on their playoff roster? I bet he's one of the guys that might – I don't know. I mean, he might be one of the guys that they move things around, move furniture around.
Well, I think that's what's fascinating. I mean, someone like him, and I thought this last year, and, you know, I don't want to get too much into Mateo specifically, you know, based on, you know, what my general point was, but I think he's on the roster. My question is he still your everyday shortstop, or has he become more of a utility guy? Obviously a pinch runner, obviously a late defensive replacement. And I think that's what's been interesting to see here recently with Gunnar Henderson having the surge that he's had. We've seen him start a couple more games at shortstop, and for now it's been Arias at third base, and obviously he won the Gold Glove there last year, so you know you get that defense. But could it look later on this season? I don't know. Could it be Gunnar Henderson at shortstop, and you have Westberg at third? I don't know. I mean, you have these different options.
To me, that might sound like an October the 8th lineup. That sounds maybe a lot different than a June the 8th lineup.
Well, and here's the perfect example. I mean, Manny Machado was caught up in August in 2012, and no one was at this point in time in 2012, no one was talking about Machado playing shortstop. It was still JJ Hardy, and Manny was at Double A, and you know, you thought, okay, next year, you know, but no one thought that. And at the time, the Orioles kind of thought, well, we've had a deficiency at third base. You know, I think at the time Wilson Betemeade or someone like that was their third baseman, and you know, the idea was, we don't know how Machado is going to hit as a 20-year-old in the big leagues, but we think he can defend at a high level, and he did that from day one. And obviously, he even hit as a 20-year-old at a respectable level. So, you know, they're having those kind of conversations right now. Not that, I mean, Jordan Westberg's not 20 years old. He's a average AAA guy from an age standpoint. So, but you're asking all these questions because Mateo doesn't have minor league options. You know, you don't have that flexibility with an Arias or with an Adam Frazier, certainly. So you only have so much room. I mean, we've seen Joey Ortiz, who has defended really well at the big league level. Maybe not hitting at the level you'd expect yet, but he hasn't had a lot of experience. So you're trying to balance this because, as we always say, and we talked about this a lot with Grayson Rodriguez, just because someone might be ready for a promotion to the big leagues, that doesn't mean that their development, that they've graduated and they've learned everything there is to learn and they're not going to struggle. So that's where you're trying to balance this because, look, right now, if you're going to tell me who's more likely to be their long-term solution at shortstop, Jorge Mateo is not going to be at the top of the list. However, you also don't want to just assume that if you're going to call up and play Joey Ortiz there more, or you're going to move Gunner there and play Westberg at third or play Westberg at second. That's you also just can't make the assumption that a young guy is not going to struggle, and at least initially being called up to the big leagues. So that's the
And we saw
difference.
that with Rodriguez pretty quickly,
We
right?
saw it with Gunnar Henderson. I mean, he got off to a hot start last year, struggled a little bit more late in the season, and we saw how he got off to a slow start this year. And since then, I mean, the last month, he's played at an all-star kind of level. That's how great he's been at the plate. So you always have to, that's part of it. And again, that's the difference. And you brought this up, and that was the point I was making, is the difference now is you even if some of these guys are imperfect, they're still doing good things for you and you're still winning with what you have. So yeah, you want to get better. And yes, I don't want to see this team be in a position where they stand pat at the trade deadline or anything like that. However, what's gotten them to this point, it's pretty good, right? I mean, 17 games over 500 at the end of this Cubs series, they're in great position. So yeah, you want to get better. Yes, you don't want to be in a position where you get complacent or too satisfied with where you are. And yes, you have these guys at the AAA level that on paper look like upside, certainly an upgrade, but are they going to play at a high level right away? You know, that's part of the unknown, and that's what you're trying to figure out. That's part of the math here that you're looking at and saying, okay, if I'm going to bring up Colton Cowser, maybe he becomes my everyday right fielder once Mullins is back, you know, and using that assumption. Okay, what are you doing with Santander then? Are you putting him at first base, which we've seen him play some first base? And are you saying to Mountcastle, hey, you're not going to play every day if you have a 270 on base percentage like you have? These questions are more complicated. And look, I want to see the young guys too, because I think the young guys are still, that's the future. That's still the upside to me that we're talking about this team, not just in, hey, they've got a great chance to make the playoffs, but hey, this is a team that could play deep in October and win a World Series at some point in the next few years. So, you know, that it you're making short-term decisions, but you also are always keeping the long-term in mind. That's still part of this. And yeah, the thing that we haven't even mentioned when we're talking about a Cowser, talking about a Westberg, or talking about anyone that's on the major league roster right now is trade deadline. To get something, you're going to have to part with something. So some of these guys that we talk about may not be here come August. And the reason why is they're traded for another pitcher or another bat or whatever it might
It would
be.
really
So
say something to me if they traded any of the big names that they have for anything in regard to how they would feel about that player. You know, whether it's Cowser, Holiday, any name any of these, Kerstad, Westberg, any of these young guys, if they deal them away, it speaks more about how they felt about that player.
yeah. Or
And
I think what's also interesting though is, do you, And not that this is going to be the centerpiece of a trade, but depend, and you know how this works in terms of salaries. I mean, all teams do it as far as what payroll is going to look like, what's coming in, what's going out, all of those questions. Is there someone that's been part of the major league team for a while that gets moved as part of a deal? I've mentioned him. Look, Ryan Mountcastle, the way that he's profiling, and I don't want to pile on the guy because, you know, he's had vertigo and I don't know how long that maybe that was affecting him, but it's been a rough year for him. The home runs and RBIs look okay, right? But you start to dig deeper, he's kind of profiled like Tony Bautista, and that's not a compliment because he's,
I
you know, he's
compared
had
him to Dave Kingman at one point, so
but
yes.
he doesn't draw any walks, so it's so tough. If he's not going to rake and be on fire just hitting for power, it's really tough. Unlike Mateo, who, yeah, you lament his lack of on base, but he gives you great defense. He gives you speed, right? Mountcastle doesn't give you those same elements. So I'm just spitballing here. Again, this is just one example of what I was trying to talk about. I wouldn't be shocked if you make a move for a starting pitcher and, you know, you're trying to balance out payroll, salary, whatever it might be. Could Ryan Mountcastle be included in a deal along with two other prospects, let's say, and you get a starting pitcher? I don't know. Again, it's just me thinking out
I
loud,
said
but
Mateo just because they hit their head with him, right? That when they have these positions where they have somebody coming, right? It's not far-fetched to think a veteran player like that would be worthwhile somewhere else on a salary basis or whatever. So I do see changes. You know, I'm not in love with any of these guys beyond Rutschman, I guess, right? Like everybody else is going to be a chess piece. And Elias didn't, his people didn't have any feelings down in Houston. As I remember it.
Well, I would also, I'd include Gunnar Henderson there too. I mean, 21 and you're seeing what he's starting to do. And I mean, obviously down below, Jackson Holliday is the one guy where I say no. I mean, when you see what he's doing as a 19-year-old at high A, I'm not trading that guy. I mean, I don't know what you could possibly get that you're moving that guy. I mean, that's just reality. But the point is, and I'm in agreement with you, it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out between now and, in the coming weeks. Mullins will be back at some point. I mean, he's progressing. They're not putting a timetable on it yet. You know, my gut tells me it's probably going to be closer to the All-Star break around then, which isn't that far away at this point. You want to be careful with him, especially that you've been able to hold down the fort with Aaron Hicks and leading off with Austin Hayes or Gunnar Henderson and doing some different things that way. And it's been able to work out for the most part. But it's going to be fascinating to see what happens with this team. I mean, we haven't even, you mentioned him in passing, but, Grayson Rodriguez at some point is going to be back up here. I mean, he's pitching well at Triple A and stays healthy. What's going to happen with DL Hall? That's been a weird scenario as far as trying to, he had the off-season back issue and they're just trying to build up his strength and they sent him to Sarasota and doesn't sound like an injury situation, but how's that going to evolve? Is he, for me it feels like at least this year his best chance to contribute is probably going to be in a relief role later in the season. And look, he's got the kind of arm that he could be another weapon for you that you're deploying besides just leaning on Felix Bautista and Yennier Cano. So, that's the bullpen's an area where we've seen middle relief and that really, that was creeping up on Friday big time. They absolutely could add to their bullpen, and that would really benefit, just to give them a little more depth. And, you're hoping Dylan Tate comes back, and you're hoping Michael Givens comes back, a much better version than what we saw. But, there are
What's the
still
means update?
means. I mean, he remember he had the upper back kind of a muscle strain. It wasn't related to throwing it. In fact, it was just, it was in a, I think he was doing some, different agility drills, something
Three
like
weeks
that.
ago that Elias talked about that,
That
maybe
was
2 weeks
what
ago.
was that? That was about 3 weeks ago. I mean, best case scenario for him is August, meaning pitching in the major leagues. I'm guessing it's, you're not gonna be able to count on that. Now, that doesn't say he can't contribute. That doesn't say, maybe he's a guy who pitches in relief for you a little bit,
Yeah, I
but
mean, I guess all along with him, I sort of saw him as starting a game September 8th at
you were
Camden
hoping.
Yards. Yeah, I sort of felt like they didn't need him in June or July. I didn't think about him, but now that we're in June and July, I'm starting to think, is it coming or is it not going to happen by October?
And I think it's too soon to say that. I don't want to dismiss that because I mean, John Means has been around, whether he's rehabbing away from the ballpark or, times where he'll come in for a series or two. I mean, he's working hard and keep in mind, he had Tommy John surgery last April. So we're in the 14-month range. That's not out of the ordinary. It's typically, 12 to 16 months, depending on, a specific timeline and how it aligns with a baseball season. So I don't want to dismiss that. My point is, I don't think you should expect that necessarily. So that's where, to me, from the moment that they found out that, that Means had that issue that was going to slow him down a little bit, to me, that's where you start to look a little more closely at the trade deadline and say, okay, what teams are going to be out of it? What pitchers are going to be out there? Who's a rental? Who's someone who is at least under contract through next year, let's say, that certainly would benefit them for 2024 as well? And is there a potential move to be made that can fortify their rotation? And you hope to couple that with a better version of Grayson Rodriguez coming back, which I'm not dismissing that either. But yeah, these are questions that these aren't, we're not saying this to be negative. These are good questions. These are fun conversations to have. If you're sitting there and you're 10 games below 500 right now, yeah, you're talking about calling up prospects later this season, but it's not consequential to the win-loss record and to playing in October. Everything we've talked about is that's it. You're trying to figure out what you want to do that's going to fortify your chances to, one, get into the playoffs, which they're in good position right now, but also to not just get there, but have a chance to make some noise. So there's a lot that could happen between now and then. And to your point, I don't think this team's going to look exactly the same come September. And it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out. In the meantime, they figured out the ways to win games with Aaron Hicks and Ryan O'Hearn and Josh Lester and, guys that you would not have anticipated helping them out even back in March. So, but that's also part of it too. I recently, I was even talking with someone. I mean, Ryan O'Hearn miscue in the outfield, notwithstanding, on Sunday that cost them a couple runs ultimately. But I think back to 2014, one of my favorites, Steve Pierce. I mean, he was a guy that, was on and off the roster and DFA'd, and he was one of their absolute best players that year by season's end. I'm not saying Ryan O'Hearn's going to do that all year, but the point is you need at least a couple unexpected contributors to lend a hand along the way, because such a long season, and we've seen that here recently with Mullins going down, with Mountcastle going down. You're going to have some injuries here and there. You're not going to have your full starting lineup all year long, so you better have some depth. And we've seen the Orioles with some of their quad A depth, so to speak, help them out a little bit. But I'm still looking forward to seeing, at some point here, hopefully in the not too distant future, seeing Jordan Westberg or Colton Cowser, or hopefully both, get a chance, because I think they both have that potential that could make this team better.
Bradish and Wells this week against the best team, and they get to measure themselves. If there's anything I remember about 89 with the Blue Jays and the Orioles, or even 96 and 97 with the Indians and the Yankees, it's sort of the positioning. And you're not seeing these teams 25 times a year like you used to. You get a couple of games here. This is a nice little measuring stick here this week. And to your point, you're not seeing them unrested, tightened up. It's quiet down there. Nobody will be there. Nobody's ever there, right? And there's a point where they're going to go down and play a little baseball that it's going to have a little bit of meaning this week, and front and back end to get a little rest for some pitching. So this is, I don't want to call it an all-star kind of week, but kind of an interesting little fly through into, hey, fellas, if you're going to want to go to the World Series, we're going to have to come down here a couple times in October, and place might be a little bit more on fire at that point. We might be taking nasty road trips down to Tampa with Orioles fans at that point. I don't know, but they'll all be in London at Tottenham. But I would say that this is a little bit of a measurement that we haven't had. Dare I say a big series? Maybe. Can I say that in June?
As big as it can be, as big as a two-game set at the Trop can be. I mean, you have a night game, and then what, the second game, I think, is a 12-10 first pitch or whatever it is. Yeah, 12-10.
That's why I said there's a lot of beach time built in there.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, it's definitely odd. But, hey, I mean, this is, you got to take advantage here. I mean, you have these very limited, it's two series in, two series away, when as talking about your division. So this is an opportunity, albeit only a two-game one. But it's an opportunity to, take advantage and try to, you played so well, and yet you look at the standings and you're five games out. I mean, they'd be in first place in almost every other division. I mean, it just speaks to how well the Orioles have played, but it's a chance to make up a little bit of ground. And you know, you look at Tampa. I mean, they lost the series to San Diego over the weekend. I mean, they, you know, they haven't been at. It sounds hilarious saying this because
You're
you look
playing
at their record.
750 ball, dude. How long do you want to play that?
But my point is, they've come back, at least here recently, they've come back to earth just a little bit. So you want to keep that going here, albeit only a two-game set. So, but you're right. And one thing has been nice, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this because we joked about it. Either our last conversation or a time before that, hey, on that last homestand, the Orioles even had a couple blowout wins that they could stay away from Batista and Cano. So, hey, you get these couple days off during the week, it rests your bullpen up.
Get the Mariners in here this week and let's beat them up.
There you go. There you go. So, I mean, it's you know, this is a again, not something that you're going to make too much out of because it's two games, but every game counts when you're talking about chasing a team like the Rays who have been so good from opening day on. I mean, it's the let's face it, the Orioles have been in an uphill battle here as well as they've played. You are 5 games out going into this series, and that's frustrating, right? Because you've been so good, but they've got some room to make up here, and they've got a chance this week.
Well, at least some people got some decent sausage and some cold beer on the north side of Chicago, even if it didn't go so well on the field. Luca was out on the fields at Owings Mills all last week as well, chronicling all things Ravens because they don't let me in anymore, interestingly enough. I'm working on some sound for WNST about that, about the part where they don't let me in and why. So we'll be doing that all summer long. Our 25th anniversary is August the 3rd. We'll be celebrating at Costas as well as at Drug City, doing a whole bunch of radio. We're going to be at Spirits West this week on Thursday afternoon, celebrating Southwest Baltimore. And it's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation, hoping to get my eye a little better and get back out on the playing field and still trying to figure out my Peacocks and my Apple Pluses. These baseball people really keeping me on my toes these days. And listening to sometimes bad, really, really bad play-by-play on radio. So I'll go back and forth, and I'll break out my to honor. I had a dream about Phil Jackman the other day to honor my TV radio repairman days. Maybe I'll revive a TV repairman in a reading time 2 minutes. I don't know what I'm going to do, but either way, back to writing. Peter Principles are up. Luke's running around. We got baseball. We got the football. Luke's got vacation coming up. It is some summertime. In a pennant race in Baltimore. I'm Nestor. He's Luke. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Taos in Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.